You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all of Major League Baseball, and I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. In today's episode, we are bringing aboard Jason Burke of Locked On A's. And guess what we're going to be talking about? We're going to be talking about a team that I have a lot of interest in. See if you can guess which one it is. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available on all the platforms you get podcasts. How do we know this? Because you're currently listening to us right now. How could you do that if you didn't have a podcatcher of some sort? Maybe you're on the website. Maybe you're at lockedonmlb.com. When you go to your smart device, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it is your team every day. Maybe you're going to check out Locked On A's. There have been a bunch of the Locked On hosts have been on recently. Check out their shows. They're all terrific, and they're all covering your team every day. We can follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB underscore net. We're also at Locked On MLB on Instagram. I'm your pal, Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Well, we're continuing bouncing around, talking to the Locked On hosts of the different teams. And we're going to be talking about a team that is a tremendous amount of interest to me, just purely on a baseball level and also for a geographical reason, because I'm in California. I'm bringing on the host of Locked On A's, Jason Burke. Welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me, Sully.
So you are the host of Locked On A's, and please, please do not look for Locked On Athletics. It is Locked On A's, and you're a new member of the Locked On Podcast Network, if I'm not mistaken.
I am indeed. I started up in January, and we've been doing daily podcasts the last couple of weeks, so we're getting that episode count up very quickly.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, that's, you know, there's a lot to talk about. This is, you know, it's funny, last year's off season, it was episode after episode of, well, no one signed Machado yet. Who wants to talk about red ropes or something to eat at the ballpark? And this year, it's something wild and new every single day going on. Now, I have been to, in the Bay Area, I've been to a ton of A's games. Are you a native of the East Bay? What's led you to A's fandom?
Well, I grew up in Concord, and my dad was an A's fan, so Concord is in the East Bay. Right. And so I grew up going to A's games and all that stuff. They were also good when I was young, so that was nice. And then later on, the Giants have gotten better, but they're tailing off again. So it's still fun being an A's fan.
So what was the A's team that you grew up with?
Oh, boy. I mean, I don't really remember the World Series of that year. I was four. Right. I remember the earthquake, but not the team. Mm-hmm. John Jaha and was like one of the earlier guys that I remember. And then, you know, I basically came of age with Giambi and Tejada and the Big Three and all those guys. Right. That's one of my all-time favorite players. I got just mashed. So, you know, that's all.
Yeah, I went to high school in the Bay Area. My senior year of high school was 1989/90. So I was in, I was on the peninsula. And to be fair, back then I hated the A's because as a native New Englander, the A's used to just clobber the Red Sox. And I pointed this out to some of my two favorite teams growing up were the Giants and the Red Sox. And between 1988 and 1990, the Giants and the Red Sox played combined 12 postseason games against the A's, and the A's won all of them.
That's a good time.
Yeah, that's
for me.
For you, yeah. But it's funny. I realized that my dislike for the A's, not just in terms of a fan, but just even in terms of history, can be pointed almost directly at La Russa. Because when I think of the A's in history, the Connie Mack A's, the, you know, the Rube Waddell, Jimmy Fox, Lefty Grove, Mickey Cochran A's of Philadelphia, the Charlie O'Finley A's, the Moneyball A's, all those teams I've actually really liked. And I've always, whether I've read about them, been intrigued by them, Billy Ball, I remember as a kid when Billy Martin took over the A's and it was impossible not to like them. I realized I just didn't like La Russa. So there's that weird little pocket that I hated the A's, and almost every other time I've really been intrigued by them. And this group, I think, is a ton of fun. And they've been so much fun to watch the last two wildcard seasons. And they've been fun to watch through the last whole decade, quite frankly. All the teams that made the postseason, 12, 13, 14, 18, and 19. I mean, that's a lot of postseason years for a team that's never supposed to win anything.
It's a lot of postseason years, not a lot of postseason games, but, you know, you get used to it. And my whole thing is with the A's, even when they're bad, they're still fun to watch. So yeah. They're not going to have, like, seasons like the Tigers were expecting or the Orioles. They're going to be relatively competitive, and they're just fun to watch, and they'll pull out some come-from-behind wins. You know, you got to watch the whole thing, but, yeah, they're always a good team to watch with players that, you know, you want to watch.
I'll tell you something that makes the experience of going to Oakland, seeing games in Oakland, is really – people think I'm joking when I say this. I'm 100% serious. It's a must experience for any baseball fan to go to Oakland for this reason. Obviously, most of the time you're talking about going to a place that has a tremendous history, like Fenway Park or Wrigley Field, or an aesthetically beautiful stadium like Camden Yards. I almost call it AT&T Park. You know, the Oracle Park where the Giants play. I think Petco Park where the Padres play is absolutely wonderful. And Dodger Stadium, and you go into there, all the highlight reels sort of come to life. But Oakland stinks as a stadium, but is extraordinary as a baseball experience, I think, for this reason. It's like when you go see a band and only the biggest fans are there, or you go to a film fest and people who are rabid fans of that film are there. Yeah, there may only be 13, 14,000 people at the cavernous and sewage-filled Oakland Coliseum, but those 14,000 are there because they love the A's. And so you are surrounded by diehard fans. There are very few casual, I'm just here to be seen fans. Those fans are there because they love their team. And it's a remarkable experience. I went up to Mount Davis last year to a game where they opened up during one of the Giants A's series. They opened up Mount Davis. And the fans that were up there were, holy cow, did they love their team. And it just was, it's a great experience if you're a baseball fan to be around truly fanatic fans.
Yeah. Oh, it's always a good time. I live in San Francisco now, and I don't go to as many games as I used to, because just getting out of the city is a pain in the butt. Mm-hmm. But going to A's games, I go to opening day and, you know, a slew throughout the course of the season, but I'll go to Giants games sometimes because they're closer, and you just hear just misinformation everywhere about, you know, different players. And you're like, that's not at all how this game works. Why? And I know that, you know, they're selling tickets and they're selling out. And so per person, there's going to be fewer people that are paying as much attention as, you know, you or I would, which is part of it. So I'm like, I watch a lot more on the couch these days than I do at ballparks. Although I am moving back to the East Bay, and Bart is going to be right next to the place. So I'm going to be going to way more A's games this year.
Well, there you go. There you go. Well, you know, it's funny that when I was in the Bay Area as a teenager, Candlestick was a dump. And so the only people who showed up to Giants games were diehard Giant fans. But now that the Giants play in a brand spanking new park, the diehards seem to have moved over, like the diehards experience seems to be moving over to Oakland. On that topic, we'll get to the 2020 A's in a minute here. But on that topic, pretty much since they arrived in the East Bay in 1968, the A's have been clamoring for a new stadium. So we're now entering, what is it, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2002. We are now in the seventh decade of the A's wanting a new stadium. And there seems to be rumors that we're closer than ever, although every few years it's like, oh, they're going to be in San Jose. Oh, they're going to be in Fremont. Oh, they're going to have this place near the docks. I just felt that, especially since the Raiders are gone, the Warriors are gone, just build something in the parking lot and call it a day. I mean, they're already there. I don't understand what the big issue is, but it sounds like they want to have something down there by the docks. What do you think the chances that this is for real, or the age is crying wolf again?
I think that the backup plan, if they can't get the one, you know, in Howard Terminal to get done, is to actually just build something in the parking lot and go from there. So they're going to stay in Oakland, I believe. But the main one that they want to do, because it'd be a prettier experience, you know, like Oracle Park across the bridge, would get a waterfront stadium. It wouldn't be facing the water like Oracle, which isn't as nice. But, you know, and getting there might be a little bit more of a hassle than getting to the Coliseum, but it feels as though it's close. And I think this summer in the next couple of months, they're going to have the environmental impact report. Mm-hmm. And once that comes out, then we'll start really getting the wheels moving. They're still, you know, shooting for 2023 somehow. I don't know how long it takes, but apparently not that long to build a baseball park. But I know that, you know, with myself, because in college I was in a speech class and I was like, oh, I was going to do a convincing argument on why the A's are moving to San Jose or Fremont or what. And that was nearly 20 years ago. So I feel like once they're digging into the ground, I will believe it. But until then, I'm like, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, the spot where a few years ago I did one of my old Sully baseball podcasts from the spot in Fremont where they wanted to build the ballpark. And it's this gigantic open field next to this groups of apartments and businesses. And you look like, yeah, they could fit a stadium here. They didn't. They totally didn't. Then I went to the place in San Jose where they were going to build it not far away from, back then it was called the HP Pavilion. Now it's called the SAP Arena, I think. Whatever it is, where the Sharks play. That's what the shoes call it. Yeah, it's where the Sharks play. And there was a spot there. I was like, yeah, you can fit a stadium here. Let's go. I thought I would have bet everything that they were moving to San Jose. Absolutely everything. Because there's so much, you know, Silicon Valley money and everything. When I worked at, I used to work at a big high-tech company in the Silicon Valley. I don't want to say which company, but their initials were HP. And they had some sort of agreement with the Sharks at the time. And there was tons of like luxury boxes and events that were being done at, you know, at Sharks games. And I thought, like, there are more baseball games and more people follow baseball than hockey. And so it's a no-brainer. There's so much money. I mean, you can't buy a studio apartment for less than $4 million in the Silicon Valley. There's money just flowing. So I thought for sure they're going to build something in San Jose. Now, whether or not it's the territorial rights by the Giants or whatever it is, they just could never get it done.
I think that's why they brought in Dave Cavill. He's seeming like the closer for getting this thing done. It's his – you know, his big thing that he's trying to achieve. And so I think he's here until he gets it done and then he'll move on and do something else. But, and he's just a friendly guy. Anything that, you know, any questions that anybody has on Twitter, he will answer them and be like, oh yeah, we're working on that. They're like, oh, hey, this green is a little bit off. Can I get a different green? And they're like, yeah, sure. He does like little things like that for everybody. And so I feel like he's going to get the job done somewhere and fairly soon.
All right. Well, let's bring getting the job done in something else. And that is, I happen to be a big believer in what the A's have done, because when you look at some other like big budgeted franchises in huge cities with lots of money flowing, like the Mets, like the Cubs to a lesser degree, like the Angels, that so many of these teams have so infrequently played a playoff game, and that the A's, I know they haven't advanced in the postseason since 1990, or no, actually, no, they did in 2006, to be fair. They did make it to the LCS in 2006, so they won since 1990. But to be fair, you got to give them credit for continually getting back to the postseason and putting a product on the field that's worth watching. And a bounce here or a bounce there, we could see a quality A's team. Now, I think the A's going into 2020 are a really intriguing team, especially when you consider they didn't make many changes, but like having Montas and Luzardo potentially back is like making a decent trade. It's like acquiring, you know, it's adding to the team where they weren't before. And hopefully Lou Trevino and Joaquin Soria could contribute. And you still have Chapman, you still have Simeon. I do believe this is a 90-win team. I do believe this is a playoff team. Am I seeing things through golden yellow glasses? Golden green glasses, sorry.
I don't think so. I think that they're between 90 and 100-win team. They haven't made a lot of changes, but they won 97 games the last 2 years, and they're arguably better this year with Fulsine, Zeta, Puck, and Montas, and Manaea, and Luzardo. The rotation is going from guys like Tanner Roark, and, you know, Mike Fiers is still there, but, you know, he's going to be like the fifth starter as opposed to number one guy, as opposed to just a patchwork rotation. They've got five legitimately good guys throwing the ball every 5 days. And then the bullpen will sort itself out because they all, I mean, nobody was great last year except for Hendricks and use Mario Petit because he's solid every year. But, you know, if Lou Trevino bounces back, all of a sudden there's another great, you know, option for them. JB Wendelken has a lot of upside. Joaquin Soria is fine. They've got guys in the minors. Like, they could throw Dalton Jeffries into the bullpen if they want to, if he's healthy. They've got starters that they can convert into relievers if they become ready for a major league opportunity, and then use them in the bullpen if the bullpen's suffering, and go from there.
And I'll go there with this. Mike Fiers has contributed big time to the A's pennant run by opening his trap. And with the domino effect of what has happened in the wake of the Astros scandal, look, I still think the Astros are the best team in the American League West, even amidst everything. That being said, they're not as strong as they were last year. They've lost Gerrit Cole. Verlander is a year older. Now, granted, someone like Urquidy could step up, but that's not a guarantee. And their bullpen is still, I think, an Achilles heel for the team. And there is something to be said about every time they're going to go on the road, that is the circled series for that fan base and a circle series for that team to say, we're going to have a packed stadium of people booing, and this is going to be our playoff series. Like when the Astros go to Kansas City or Detroit, that's going to be their playoff series for that fan base. And I can't help but wonder if, because, you know, the A's won 97 games last year. If the Astros regress a little bit and the A's improve a little bit, is the American League West in play?
I think it is, actually. And for a lot of the reasons that you actually outlined, I talked about them on the podcast last week. Say the Astros were, you know, they won 100 and something games last year. If say the margin's like 7 games, and then you lose Gerrit Cole, so that's 2-3 games right there. So you're looking at 4-1 difference, and then you got Puck, Luzardo, you know, just a healthy A's rotation moving forward. Maybe there's a couple wins, and then all of a sudden that the margin's only a couple of games to go with. And then, as you said, when the Astros go on the road and hear it from fans all the time, that's going to take a toll at some point, I would have to believe. And that could be just a couple more games right there, and then all of a sudden you're in a dead heat, and then we'll see what happens from there. But I think that the Astros hearing it from fans on the road all the time, and, you know, also not cheating, is going to have an effect.
I'll tell you something else that I find interesting, that when the A's won the division in 2012, they were going up against the Rangers, who had just won back-to-back pennants, were looking to avenge the World Series that got away in 2011. And right up until, I'd say, 3 weeks left to go in the season, the Rangers looked like not only was the AL West a foregone conclusion, but it looked like they were just going to steamroll their way right back to the World Series. And then they fell apart. And I will say that the delta between the Rangers and the A's in 2012 going into the season was miles wider than the delta between the Astros and the A's this season. What I'm saying is that there have been times that it looks like there's a prohibitive favorite for a division and everything logically lines up. And I mean, we have to go back to 2012. We go to last year when Cleveland looked like the only contender in the American League Central. And then the Twins wound up winning 101 games. I think it was 101 games. I don't remember exactly off the top of my head. So the idea that the West is a foregone conclusion for the Houston Astros, that's I'm not buying it.
Oh, definitely. And this team is better than the 2012 A's as well. They've got just more proven talent. And, you know, everybody has the long jangle thing now. So I think that this team is maybe not this year, but this is going to be the beginning of something for sure. They've got some special players on this team.
Okay. So let me throw something at you right now.
All right.
I'm a native New Englander. I've been a Red Sox fan my whole life, but I'm getting tired of the Red Sox. I am. I am not moving back to New England. I have no real emotional ties to New England anymore, other than that's where I spent most of my childhood and it's where I was born. But I'm a West Coast guy now. I'm going to live on the West Coast for the rest of my life unless I get an amazing job offer to go elsewhere. And also, there's no more hills left to climb with the Red Sox. I've seen them win, even if they have to vacate the 2018 title. And if they were cheating, then I advocate that they should. I got to be consistent. I've been advocating that the Astros should, turn out the Red Sox would. All right. I still have 3 World Series titles in my lifetime that I've seen. I can give out a gold medal and bronze to my favorite World Series winner. I got no more hills to climb as a Red Sox fan. No more challenges. I'm feeling stagnant. Should I become an A's fan?
I mean, there's plenty of room on the bandwagon right now.
Well, there's plenty of room at the stadium. It's not obviously tickets are available. You know, there's plenty. I could put my jacket on one chair, put my feet up, put my hot dog on the other. It's not about space. I'm just talking about emotionally. Should I join your bandwagon?
You're probably going to have to go through a couple of bad seasons first. Like if they had won in 2012, that one would have came out of nowhere. It would have been like a special win. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, as A's fans have put in our time watching this team and getting heartbroken year after year, even though, you know, they keep making the playoffs, just not advancing very far. When they do win that World Series, it's going to be special. And it's kind of like the Cubs and the Red Sox when they won, you know, theirs. It'll be similar, only the drought wouldn't be nearly as long. They'll just have more cracks at it. And if you're up for some heartbreak and an eventual hopeful payoff, go ahead. And if not, and you just like watching, you know, lots of promising young players and, you know, seeing them get traded, join the A's.
You know, the best thing could happen with an A's title: a kick-ass sequel to Moneyball.
Oh, definitely.
This time with a happy ending. Sound like how Rocky, the original Rocky, he loses, but, you know, he doesn't. By the way, spoiler alert if you haven't seen the Rocky movies, but in the original Rocky, he loses, but he gains his dignity back, and he is someone, and he was still standing when the last round was over, and Rocky was a huge hit, so we got to do it again, except this time we have to have him win, for goodness sakes. And so Moneyball 2, or Moneyball TOO, or Moneyball 2020, whatever it is, the Moneyball Strikes Back, what are some of the Electric Boogaloo, Moneyball in the Temple of Doom, what are some of the other ones? You know, Moneyball Endgame.
Moneyball Giambi Slid.
Oh, God. Moneyball the Two Towers, you know, all the different things that we could, you know, Moneyball 2, The Secret of the Ooze. All these sequels that we could throw at you. Let's face it, what it would be. It would be Moneyball 2 Judgment Day. Let's get down to brass tacks here. That film will be great.
It'd be great. Oh, I would watch that in a heartbeat.
You know, Brad Pitt's won 2 Oscars since Moneyball came out, both producing 10 Years a Slave and then Once Upon a Time in Hollywood this last February. So, you know, he doesn't need an Oscar. So he's just just get me in there. And we got Jonah Hill's got to win an Oscar, and we don't have to worry. Sadly, we don't have to worry about Philip Seymour Hoffman as Art Howe anymore. But we need to get someone to play Bob Melvin. So maybe that's what we got to do. We got to cast. Who do we cast as Bob Melvin? I mean, it's got to be. I mean, is it Michael Fassbender? I mean, it's got to be someone tall and kind of imposing. I mean, just
Fassbender might be a little too young.
Yeah. So, how old is Bob Melvin? I'm going to go to baseballreference.com. We went down this rabbit hole. I did not expect to go. I want the record to show. All right, he's 50. Let's say I'm going to Google right now. I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm not even going to edit this out. 60-year-old movie star. Who's 60 years old? Let me get some people who are 60 years old. Nope, can't be Kevin Spacey. Kevin Spacey's too problematic. Nope, can't be Mike Pence, also too problematic.
Gene Hackman, is he too old?
Oh, God, Gene Hackman's 90 and he's retired. No. Gene Hackman's done. Matthew Modine. Ooh. Matthew Modine's the right age. He kind of looks like
that is, but I'm looking it up.
Matthew Modine was you know he's from Full Metal Jacket. You know
who he is.
You know who he is. He's the right age and he has the right look. Aidan Quinn.
I can see that.
Aidan Quinn, another great actor, right age, right look. So I mean maybe this is what I gotta do. And by the way, if anyone out there has any ideas for who we should have play Bob Melvin, right off the bat, we got Aidan Quinn and Matthew Modine. Granted, those would be much bigger news if this was 1989 and not 2020. But still, I mean, let's get down to brass tacks. You know who also is the right age is Norm Macdonald. So tell me you wouldn't want to see Norm Macdonald and Brad Pitt in a movie.
Oh, I want that. I want to be there for every day of filming. I will be an extra for a whole year. It's fine. I want that movie.
Oh, here's another one. Right age. Bradley Whitford. Great actor.
Okay.
From the West Wing and thousands of other things.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's plenty of people. So let's
just start a casting call now.
Yeah, let's get it all ready, and now all they have to do is win the World Series. that's all they've got to do.
We don't need a script for this. This is gold.
We got gold. We got gold. We got Brad Pitt. We got Jonah Hill. And we've got Norm Macdonald as Bob Melvin. Folks, call up Fandango right now. Their tickets are already sold out of this film. All right, man. Hey, when we're Googling actors, that's when we know we're wrapping things up here. So why don't you tell me where and when people can hear you?
We are Monday through Friday daily on the Locked On A's podcast. You can find us wherever you find this podcast, same platforms. We are at Locked On A's on Twitter. I am at By Jason B on Twitter. And if you have mailbag questions about the A's, go ahead and email them to us at lockedonathletics@gmail.com.
Ooh, you went to athletics on the Gmail. Look at that. You went to form. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, you can follow us on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. Check us out on all the different places you get your podcasts. This has been a discussion with Jason Burke from Locked On A's. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. For Locked On MLB, please call me Sully.